Hello and welcome back to Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers, the podcast devoted to exploring the frontiers of psychedelic medicine and what it takes to cultivate a healthy mind, body, and spirit. As always, Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers is brought to you by Numinous. I'm Dr. Steve Thayer, and today my co-host, Dr. Reed Robison, and I are joined by none other than Numinous CEO, Peyton Nyquist. Peyton shares his personal experience with psychedelic healing today and reveals how his desire to pay forward that healing experience resulted in the formation of the company known as Numinous. We talk about the importance of community in the psychedelic therapy context, explore some of the challenges that psychedelic therapy clinics currently face, discuss the importance of good training for psychedelic therapists, especially experiential training, and of course, much, much more. Folks, in this recording, you might notice a few spots where Reed's mic kind of acted up. We did our best to fix this in post with some fancy audio engineering, but couldn't clear it all up. So please don't let those few moments turn you off from the whole conversation. Stick it out. You won't regret it. We talked quite a bit in this episode about training. If you'd like to check out the psychedelic therapy training opportunities and offerings that Numinous has, click on the link in the show notes or go directly to numinous.com/our-training-selection and use the code PTF10 for 10% off selected trainings. We also talked quite a bit about psychedelic clinical trials, the work that Numinous does. So if you or somebody you know is interested in being a participant in a psychedelic clinical trial, you can click on the link in the show notes or go directly to numinous.com/research to learn more about those trials. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by leaving us a review or a rating in places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're watching on YouTube, you can like the video, subscribe to the show. We've gotten a lot of great reviews lately, and we really appreciate that. So without further ado, I bring you Numinous CEO Peyton Nyquist. Welcome back, everybody, to Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers. Reed and I are excited today to be joined by Numinous CEO Peyton Nyquist. How you doing, Peyton?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think it's been a long time coming. We've talked about having you on for a while, and here we are, the momentous day. And this probably won't be the last time we have you on here. But Reed and I thought it might be fun just to kind of start with you, Peyton, to introduce yourself to our audience, to kind of talk about your path to creating this company, but your personal growth path with psychedelics, and then we kind of roll from there.
Sure. Thanks again for having me. And my path. So I really, you know, my kind of direct relationship to this was I was someone who was born with chronic pain, and was, as I was kind of going through the sort of early, in my very early life of trying to figure out, you know, more on a physical health basis, you know, what was happening and how do I rectify that? One of the sort of profound things that happened for my family was, my mom suffered with substance abuse and, got sober when I was about 12 and, came home from being at a facility and was gone for about 6 months. And when she came home, she came home and was the version of herself that I always hoped she could see for herself, not the version that I wanted, but I wanted her to be able to see what I potentially saw in her. And that was really inspiring for me, in, you know, giving me this other lens of like, oh, well, you know, maybe there is a kind of mental health aspect, and as a 12-year-old, you know, not really understanding what mental health is, but it was, oh, hey, the, you know, arguably the most important person in my life has gone and, you know, done things to address and be healthy. And that was really inspiring to me. And so, and the first thing she said to me when she came back from that facility was, you know, I'm sorry about the last 12 years and you might want to start talking to somebody. And I took that really seriously because of my chronic pain. And that kind of led me on this I kind of call it like a healing crusade. It was everything from every single, you know, on the physical health side, it was every single diet, every single type of doctor, every, you know, literally anything that I could get my hands on to try and alleviate these chronic pain symptoms. And then with that, really also kind of diving really deeply into the mental health side of things too. And everything from, you know, easily accessible modalities that we have in North America to mindfulness and meditation and, you know, just trying to find anything that I could to try and alleviate what was going on for me. But got myself to a point a number of years ago where I'd really felt like I'd kind of exhausted all of the options that were available to me. And no matter what I was doing, my chronic pain actually just continued to get worse. And towards kind of the end of that part of the journey, I was ending up in the hospital about 3 days a week and was really kind of out of options, and turned to psychedelics really as a last ditch. I'd never had a psychedelic experience as someone who grew up in a family that struggled with substance abuse. I was always sort of the like anti-recreational drug person. You know, I was going to do it differently than my parents did, and ended up actually while I was in the hospital booking a flight to Costa Rica to go and do ayahuasca, and booked my flights while I was in the hospital, went home, packed my bags and flew down. And by absolutely no means to paint the picture of a panacea, but 1 week down there and I never had any chronic pain symptoms ever again. And it was really quite an inspiring and frankly also just a very confusing kind of thing to come home back to. And that was actually really what the impetus for creating Numinous was you know, this recognition that, like, yes, these sort of catalytic experiences are available, but, you know, they're really only as good as you're able to bring them home. And mm-hmm. that for me was what was really, really hard coming back from that experience was, you know, I didn't have community. Fortunately I had a lot of resources in regards to like mental health support, but I didn't know anybody that had gone through these kinds of experiences. I didn't have people that had a sort of shared language around that. And it was a scary time for me, because it felt like, you know, I had this experience and this alleviation of the chronic pain, but it felt like this like newborn experience mm. that like I was really trying to like, how do I protect this thing? How do I keep this thing present within me and you know, water it and grow it before, you know, just falling back into the same patterns. And you know, that I then spent quite a lot of time, you know, I think where I was in a bizarre way, where I was fortunate was, you know, the memories and challenges of severe chronic pain were so present for me still that there was no option for me to like just rest back on my laurels and fall back into the same old pattern, because that to me was, you know, that was death. So that's really, you know, what gave me the sort of volition to go and find community and create, you know, a lasting plan for myself. So anyway, that's the shortest version of a really wow. long story.
That's a powerful story. How old were you at the time? Both those things, when your mom came back from treatment, that would be really profound to witness.
Yeah, I was 12 at that time. And
And then ayahuasca was your first psychedelic experience.
I jumped right in. deep end of the pool. But I was in my late 20s when I did that.
Maybe even more often than not, as part of the integration process, is trying to make sense, piece oneself together, show up in a new way after this great, even useful shakeup of all these parts of your inner and outer world. That, you know, that's a really cool origin story.
Yeah. I tell people, it's almost a little bit of careful what you wish for. You know, we want this big, you know, catharsis and all that comes with that. But, you know, the other side of it is, you know, I remember even thinking like I'd even gotten used to my weekly schedule of being in the hospital 3 days a week. And I was like, there's all this time that, you know, what do I do with all this time that I was spending in the hospital on a weekly basis? You know, do I get more haircuts now or, you know, what do I do with myself? So, and especially with, you know, with people and the thing that it was from an identity standpoint, you know, when it's something that is really something that you've lived with your whole life, like even my family, it was like, my family knew me as, you know, Peyton with chronic pain. My friends knew me as Peyton with chronic pain. And it was like, now I've got to recreate not only the relationship to myself and not that people were necessarily carrying that as like the main part of my identity, but you knew that about me. And, mm-hmm. So it was a very interesting process to go through.
Yeah. Your story is like a living example of what I've sometimes used as an analogy in integration groups of like, you know, say you've gone on a trip to the jungle or backpacked around the world, returning home can be a shock to the system. Like you've had all these incredible experiences and it's changed you, but the life and circumstances and people around you are basically the same, living out their regular lives. So it might, like, you go on this consciousness world tour or experience the turning of night, and then you go back to the office and try and make small talk with coworkers, mm-hmm. and it can be jarring. It can be emotional turbulence and it can take all those things you mentioned, like community and support. So yeah, I'm glad this part of the story came up too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Even like I'm myself, and I know you guys too, but you know, I've been fortunate enough to do some of this work in cultures where, you know, this has been a part of these different experiences have been a part of their culture for thousands and thousands of years. And there's this sort of like scaffolding and infrastructure that is there, even if it's just a shared language, to, you know, have some of that. And we don't have that necessarily in North America. And I think it's something that we really need to continue to bring attention to as, you know, these different modalities and different experiences become more and more available for people, is there has to be a cultural shift and a cultural context for these things too, because it's a lot. It is a lot.
It's such an important point. And, you know, we're making an effort in the West to try to implement psychedelic tools into sort of the Western medical system. I'd love to hear you just think out loud about what people can do to, to sort of beef up the sort of community and cultural aspect of this healing. Cause as I hear you talk about it, Peyton, it seems to be, integral. Like it seems to be a really, really important piece to this puzzle.
Yeah. It's a big question. You know, I honestly think the thing first and foremost is, even before we kind of get into the depth and breadth of the experience, but just even in education of, you know, exactly what we're talking about, like what actually is the experience and what really needs to go into both sides of that experience. I think, you know, we're so used to in the West, this sort of like symptom treating of, you know, hey, here's your drug so you can get, you know, here's your prescription so you can get back to doing all of the things that you've been doing the whole time, right? And whereas this is, you know, it's a different, and not that, you know, everybody needs to race out and radically change their life based off of these experiences, but you do need to understand that, you know, you're looking to make even in an internal dramatic shift in a condensed, like a condensed period of time from an experience standpoint. But then again, how do you really support that shift? And I think education, exactly what we're talking about, around the importance of preparation, around the importance of integration, around the importance of community. And community can look really different for different people. It doesn't have to be, you know, this kind of like one, it doesn't have to be a psychedelic community. Maybe your community is, you know, playing baseball, right? And it's like, my community is playing baseball and I want to be able to be able to bring the language of what I'm experiencing as a person to my baseball community, right? And I think we think that we have to like abandon, you know, all of our old ways or abandon our community. And I think the more we can provide education and awareness around what these experiences are for people, regardless necessarily of like which community you resonate with, I think then we really create this more stable foundation than necessarily like, hey, here's this one particular community that you have these conversations with, but then everything else is maybe, you know, absent of that. And that, you know, a part of that is just also going to take time, but I do think, and not to necessarily speak out of both sides of my mouth, but also, you know, find those places of support, find those places where, you know, when inevitably you do run into challenges of how do you talk to people about, you know, these experiences or maybe not, you know, finding some places where at least there's people going through those kind of common experiences too. You know, it's funny, like the first retreat I went on, integration was literally like them throwing a Facebook group together and saying like, here's your integration in your community. And that was, you know, years and years ago. And that group still talks regularly to this day. It's still very, and nobody moderates it. Nobody keeps it going. It's totally self-perpetuated, but I think it speaks to the need and the draw for that. And also, you know, there's something extremely powerful to going through a shared experience, whether that is in a group or individual, but to be able to connect with people who've also had shared experiences so that, you know, maybe you don't have to explain things as much and you can just kind of sit with someone and bring up a little piece of something. And, you know, I call it like the psychedelic wink of like, you sit with someone who, you know, has kind of been there before and they kind of look at you and you look at them and you go, okay, they know what I'm talking about without me needing to get into the depth of it all.
It is connecting, to go through that eternity and night or the dark night of the soul or whatever your experience is together. I mean, it's why we love group work too, in addition to the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a couple other points you made about community is that we don't have to be really territorial or picky about the types of community we form. You know, we just, in a previous episode, interviewed Tanner Yarrow, who has this Dungeons and Dragons company. And he was talking about finding community in his Dungeons and Dragons group. And not that the whole group got together and did ayahuasca, although that would be very interesting to do Iowa with a bunch of D&D nerds. Sign me up for that. That'd be pretty cool. But, you know, I like at least the two different forms, right? There's the community that we all need or are in dire need of, that we have so little of nowadays. We're more connected than ever via the internet and social media, but also in a lot of ways more isolated than we've ever been. So finding a community of just people, and then finding that community that you can wink with, right? People, like you and Reed mentioned, maybe these are the people you journeyed with, and there's that shared ordeal that you've been through that bonds you in a very special way. Or at least people who kind of know what that ordeal is like of a psychedelic experience, so that there's a common language and common history and common struggle that you can really relate on.
I'm curious from both of your perspective, you know, even thinking about ketamine, obviously, which is what's available to us now. And you know, for me, the kind of all of these experiences are so individual, but I find the ketamine space in particular is quite a expansive or diverse one in regards to experience. And so when you think about building community around that, you know, even there's so many different ways of admitting, whether you're going in for IV or lozenge or IM, therapy, no therapy, all, you know, all these kind of different modalities that are there. I'm curious, you know, what have you guys seen as kind of successful in regards to creating a community that is kind of shared of those experiences?
You know, Reed mentioned our group work. We've done at Numinous, we've done several ketamine therapy groups. And Reed, maybe you can talk a little bit about your most recent group that you run, but it's really interesting to see the diversity, like you said, Peyton, of experiences with the medicine, but how having very different experiences doesn't make the community any less cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was certainly the case in this recent cohort. We would meet in my office here for talking sessions and then down the hall in our group room for dosing. And you know, we'd pour a cup of tea and just share what, you know, whether it's intentions, you know, what's on our hearts or what happened in the experiences and in life, and work on like setting the container of this empathetic kind of listening for each other was really powerful. So it was really touching and striking how much we learn from each other's different experiences in addition to the overall kind of shared ordeal.
Interesting.
Yeah. When I've run sort of general psychedelic integration groups where it's, you know, everybody comes with their unique experiences with various medicines, ketamine is sort of a unique, I mean, they're all unique, like you said, Peyton, but ketamine tends to provide people with kind of a unique psychedelic type experience. But I found that the folks who had ketamine experiences to integrate really could connect with and learn a lot from the folks who were there with psilocybin or LSD or ayahuasca experiences. Certainly there were differences, but the mind manifesting experience of the non-ordinary state, there's enough overlap, I think, that there's a place, there's a home for ketamine experiencers in the broader community of psychedelic integration.
Yeah. And we see that in the integration circles and integration groups at Numinous. And Steve and I have done a lot of those in different formats through the years. And it's really easy to combine people from all these different medicines, classic and non-classic psychedelics in that kind of format. It's been really neat to see and learn from all the different experiences that come into a circle like that.
I find it fascinating. You know, I think what is kind of being ushered through at the moment in North America, because it pulls from so many different, because it doesn't have an origin necessarily, that, you know, a lot of, whether you go to Peru or, you know, different geographies that kind of have a steep traditional practice in a particular way or with a particular substance. You know, the West in North America has kind of got this like soup of all of these different experiences and modalities and all this kind of stuff that, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the recipe looks like a couple of years from now. But
yeah, things are changing.
Well, it's very North American, right? I mean, we're a melting pot of cultures in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I know there are sensitive subjects around cultural appropriation and things like that Numinous tries to be very sensitive about. But ultimately, I feel like we learn from each other when we come together in these groups, and we're really just trying to elevate healing, elevate consciousness, if I could get a little woo-woo for for a second. And when we can come together with that shared intent, there's so much that we can learn from each other and make our own. You know, I've talked about on the podcast growing up in a religious environment and then leaving that religious environment and kind of feeling out to sea a little bit when it came to meaning and purpose and an understanding of the transcendent. And it was through my experiences with psychedelics and the community around psychedelic journeying and healing and exploration that I sort of found my way back to at least some of that stuff. So, not to digress too far, but
Yeah, it's something I experienced too, Steve, in my career, totally independent of the psychedelics, but just in terms of learning from the culture, like in doing work with kind of indigenous groups in other parts of the world where they have these, deep traditions, has been, it kind of blew the lid off my previous, like very limited Western worldview. And especially in the healthcare system, we have this model of like, the medical model is just so interesting. It's like antagonism. We're fighting the disease. But in some of these other cultures, you've got the doctor, the medicine person forming a relationship with the whole life world of the individual, not just sickness, but like, where have you lost harmony in yourself, mm-hmm. in your family, your tribe, and focusing on like, when did you stop singing or dancing or telling stories with each other or communing with the divine and whatever that means. Mm-hmm.
You know, Peyton, before we move on to the numinous origin story, I'm curious, just sort of building off what Reed said, do you feel like you have any insight into what was different about your ayahuasca experience versus the kind of treatments you were already getting for your chronic pain that made it so impactful?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was really sort of an acute moment for me in regards to that where, again, with it being something that I'd lived with my whole life, was that I had this real belief that something was wrong with me that I had to fix. That gets reinforced by your parents who don't want you to be suffering anymore, your friends, all of this kind of stuff. And so I just had this deeply ingrained, and then, the really challenging part was continuously reaffirmed by never finding out what was wrong or really finding a solution for. So getting a diagnosis, trying to treat it that way, turning out that's not the thing. But, this challenge of like, am I inherently broken? Am I simply, flawed to the core? And that leads you, to some pretty dark places in regards to you looking at your own mortality. The thing that for me, I had an experience of really, really just accepting that maybe this is just exactly what it's supposed to be for me. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that. And not like I think we talk about acceptance and there's this like, okay, well, I'm going to do the acceptance thing with like this little like glimmer of like, and maybe that will bring me to where I'm trying to get to. This was like a hands and knees, full acceptance. It was both a second and an eternity in the same moment, but really finally finding that acceptance of maybe there's nothing to fix. And maybe this is solely just me needing to accept that this is my reality and it's beautiful in that. And that one moment of really just touching that full acceptance and gratitude was really what brought that through. And I have a teacher who says this to me all the time, and it's funny because I say that and I still to this day get challenged with it, but he always says to me, nothing to fix, everything to accept, nothing to fix, everything to accept.
Love that.
And it's that for me was really, the biggest thing was just being able to have that self-acceptance of my existence.
Yeah,
really.
I love how you said that, like hands and knees acceptance, or like a real embodiment of it.
Well, and it's, I'm sure there's plenty of people listening who experience chronic pain. And I know that you started with the caveat that there are no panaceas and you don't want to give the impression that there are miracle cures out there, but your experience with ayahuasca in particular, or psychedelics generally, isn't necessarily entirely unique, right? Some people do. So they find the connection between psychological suffering or resistance and physical pain. And certainly, you know, our colleague Devin Christie has done some research and some work on this, but there seems to be a good use case for psychedelics in chronic pain.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm really fascinated by that I feel like with all the research that we're doing, we haven't seen or talked too much about this, but I think even if we're thinking about, you know, treating things like PTSD, depression, anxiety, you know, all these mental health indications, I'm fascinated and curious to see, you know, what that also means for physical ailments and the alleviation of that burden on the healthcare system in regards to, you know, all of the physical challenges that people go through also. I think that's something that gets kind of underappreciated at the moment. And, you know, to your point, for me, there's really, you know, the one thing that I continued to find was that, you know, there was nothing necessarily unique about my experience. There were so many people that had very, very similar sort of experiences that were ready and willing to share them. So
people don't often appreciate, although it kind of makes sense when you look at it, is how common that is, like chronic pain. I think the last figure I read was 20-something percent of North Americans are living with some kind of chronic pain, meaning a few months or longer. And you know, it's up there, 5 or 10% who have it that like limit some of their daily activities. And so if we're looking at like, you know, depression is widespread, of course, but chronic pain even more so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When there's so much overlap between people who suffer with chronic pain who also have depression for very understandable reasons. And most chronic pain clinics have some kind of psychological component to the treatment strategy. And it's usually based around mindfulness and usually based around acceptance. So I don't think that's an accident here, that this message that you got during the medicine session of relinquishing control, you are not broken, you are not sick, but the pathway through is through acceptance. You know, I don't think that was an accident.
Yeah. Agreed. I think for me that I still go back to the chicken and egg question of, which thing, and I wish it was that simple, but I think for a lot of people, we want to try and, you know, throw as many things at the physical, you know, especially when it's something like chronic pain, we want to throw as many things at the physical aspect of it before we start to look at the mental, emotional, spiritual aspect of things. And that's just unfortunate. That's the way our system is oriented towards. And I think, you know, I know for myself, and this is something that I thought a lot about after, but you know, especially with physical ailments, the place of last resort you go to is the emergency room. And, you know, you go to the emergency room and I think, you know, for myself, fortunately, I had a lot of education around addiction, but, you know, I go to the emergency room and their way of treating me was, you know, a hydromorphine shot. And in 30 minutes, you know, my whole experience of like, you know, really, you know, questioning, the big race for me was, can I make it to the emergency room in time, or do I need to take matters into my own hands? And that was, you know, the kind of constant race. And then you get hit with, you know, with this opiate, and in 30 minutes, all your pain is gone, and you start to even question your experience, right? You go into like, was that even real? Did I make that all up? What are people going to think because of how I was feeling when I went in here? But never really moving to a solution. And I think that's something we have to be so cautious of and aware of is, you know, we have really, really good tools for taking things for giving brief moments of alleviation as quickly as possible. We've built lots of tools around that. But that's as we know, it's a very slippery slope too.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one that concerns me, speaking about the healthcare system. There's a lot of resistance to receiving and a lot of hesitation by clinicians in sharing the psychosomatic component of that is by definition involved in pain and how we perceive the world. And like you said, you know, in this culture of medical antagonism and quick fix that we are all kind of steeped in, it's easy to either turn for in discomfort the quick fix or get them offered right and left everywhere we look for help. And those just pile up. And, you know, what we end up doing in clinics a lot of the time is deprescribing and trying to figure out what has really been helpful and what hasn't, and not just layering on another medicine, leaving on the old list and, you know, throwing things at the wall, seeing what sticks and not really knowing what's going on underneath the hood.
So Peyton, I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about, you know, you told us your personal origin story and it was a nice setup for like starting the company that is Numinous, but tell our audience a little bit about this company.
Yeah. So kind of going off of that, I then kind of went on the healing crusade continued and, you know, went and, continued to really deepen into integration, finding community, having other experiences. But in the sort of finding of community, you know, one of the things that I really felt, and I know a lot of people feel this after they go through these experiences, is, you know, how can I give back? What is there something that I can do? And that was really, you know, I came out of that experience just saying, you know, how can I give back to something that saved my life? How can I help raise some awareness around this philanthropy, you know? And that's kind of led me to just start reaching out. And I was really fortunate, like very, very early on, to get connected to some amazing people. Dr. Evan Wood, who's been instrumental in Numinous, you know, the folks at MAPS. And as I kind of continued to have those conversations, and I was just asking, you know, what does this need? And, you know, money is always the first thing, you know, research is expensive and funding, but really like, right. The thing that I actually heard more of was that, you know, all this amazing research was happening, but nobody was really building any sort of infrastructure to be able to actually transition what was happening in the lab and being able to make it accessible to people and into practice. And, that kind of really hit home for me when I met Rick Doblin, actually, who's the founder of MAPS. And Rick and I were talking a lot about, in our first meeting, we talked a lot about therapist training and our sort of feelings around everything from, just general therapist training to experiential training and our feelings around, you know, the importance of that being able to be available for people. And so, you know, I started to do the initial thing. At the time, Ibogaine and Iboga was actually legal up in Canada. And there was, you know, different facilities that were starting to do that. And I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe that's something that's available for people. But it felt really important to be able to provide something that felt like it was in people's backyards. I kept, you know, people were going on retreats and I saw a lot of that happening. And there was this real kind of, as we've been talking about, this real challenge around, you know, what happens when you come back home. And so I really wanted to try and help make an impact in people's backyards and create space for people to have access to something like that. And I think for me, where I was also very, very fortunate was because I had such a scaffolding that had already been created around just, you know, more accessible mental health practices. And I saw the importance of that. I saw the importance of, you know, having those resources available to me so that when I went into those experiences, I could help sort of not just navigate, but also help with integration. So, you know, continue to sort of look at different opportunities. And there was a clinic in Vancouver that it was really sort of the kind of community rallying point. They'd been very pro psychedelic therapy and looked a lot at ketamine and was kind of a place that the community in Vancouver and kind of Western Canada really centered around. And, you know, this was kind of before any of call it psychedelic industry had emerged, and so we'd acquired that clinic and started to look at, you know, what would a model look like that would work with this kind of diverse set of services of, you know, yes, psychedelic therapy, but also just integration support, mental health therapy. You know, we lots of different kind of blends of that. And then as that continued to evolve, then, you know, it felt literally like overnight, the whole kind of, it always feels weird to call it an industry. I feel like that's an inaccurate depiction, but all of a sudden there was this huge amount of momentum around psychedelics and the potential for therapy. And so, but that was really where it was born from, was from just having those conversations with the community and just asking, you know, what would be needed, what would be helpful to be able to move this and advance it forward. And, you know, so the sort of clinical infrastructure, but at its real core as well, training and making sure that we were providing a pathway for people to be able to get trained, have a place to practice, and you know, going back to community of people who were, you know, on a similar sort of path in regards to what they wanted to be able to offer to their clients.
So you mentioned kind of the excitement around psychedelic medicine, the so-called psychedelic renaissance, and the companies and nonprofits and various organizations that have stood up in the last few years to try to bring these healing modalities to people. And, you know, you mentioned making it accessible. You mentioned starting with something that's in people's backyard, right? Being able to do ketamine treatments for people, not just giving them the medicine and wishing them well, but actually in the context of therapy being really important. Mm-hmm. And then also training. So one word you used was experiential training. For those of our listeners who don't know what that means, that's psychedelic therapists actually getting experience with the medicine themselves. And there's a little bit of a debate among psychedelic therapists about whether or not that should be essential or quote unquote required. But I think most people would agree that, you know, we're not just doing regular therapy here. This is very unique. Mm-hmm. And these not altered states are very unique. And a lot of our clients who are about to go into a potentially, you know, intimidating or scary, unknown altered state want to know that you, as their therapist or their guide, their psychological support, kind of know the territory. So maybe you could speak a little bit to experiential training opportunities or the promise of experiential training.
Yeah, I think to your point, you know, obviously we can't mandate that anybody, you know, have to have one of these experiences. But I do think it's very important. And frankly, I think, you know, there's so many people that have reached out to me who are practitioners who don't have, you know, any psychedelic experience, are very curious about, you know, this modality being able to become available for their clients. And they want to be able to try and have an experience in a regulated setting that doesn't put them, you know, these people are registered practitioners who don't want to put their livelihood and their license on the line and you know, want to be able to have an experience of what that's like to educate themselves. And so I think, you know, the importance of experiential training and not just the importance of it, but a pathway that can also have that be recognized. I know for myself, and this is just my bias, but I feel comfortable when I know that someone has been to some of the, you know, places or has some of the context for, you know, where I'm about to go. I think that's, you know, one of the dynamics that's kind of different in regards to being sitting with someone in psychedelic therapy versus, you know, the kind of old paradigm of like, I'm the fixer, you're the client, I'm here to, you know, it is a relational experience that people are going through. So, you know, I always sort of akin it to like, I wouldn't get in a plane with anybody that has never flown a plane before. And I think it's a little bit similar to that. And so, you know, we've at Numinous, we push really hard to be able to provide access and in the summertime announced a collaboration to be able to do experiential training with MDMA assisted therapy in conjunction with MAPS, and we're in the process of moving through getting approval for that up in Canada. It wouldn't be something that is restricted just to Canadians. Americans would be able to come up as well. But it is one of the kind of more interesting topics of at the moment in regards to, you know, yes, we've been pushing hard for approval for these other modalities, but, you know, what happens? It's almost, again, this sort of careful way of wish for. So we're going to have approval, but then, you know, how do you train enough people? And I think there's a very, very big difference between training and good training. Yeah. And I think we've tried to like really sort of like protocolize training into this like neat box that we can try and rush people through as quickly as possible, where, you know, training needs to be, you know, robust and needs to have, you know, the inputs of people who have had experiences before and to be able to sit with someone. I think, you know, the final thing that I've experienced, you know, the with experiential training is, you know, some of the states that people get into can be very uncomfortable and can present like something that looks very, very uncomfortable. And our initial reaction is to, you know, try and alleviate discomfort. But I know for myself, some of the most profound experiences that I've had is, you know, myself moving through discomfort, working through a challenge and getting out on the other side. And I think, you know, you really can't really understand the nuances of, you know, what that looks like or presents for somebody in a psychedelic state without, you know, putting yourself in their shoes.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Like that difficulty, that discomfort, that stuff is like the fuel for your transformation. And I like what you're pointing out about the experience too in training, not just personal experiential or personal experience with the medicines, but also experience doing the work. And I think that's what really excites me about what we have to offer in addition to the curriculum is the clients doing the work and the fellow clinicians who can, you know, help mentor one another, learn from each other. I think it was in, what's that book? The Psychedelic Experience, a manual based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, Alpert Metzner Leary, talking about qualities of a guide. And it's like, I think in that they say considerable experience in psychedelic sessions yourself and in guiding others is one of their kind of prerequisites.
I like that. That's, you know, I think, and there's lots of conversation about things like the inner healer and stuff like that. But I think the more we can continue to try and orient people towards, you know, self-resolved healing or being a part of really the process of, and that healing process themselves comparative to, you know, someone stepping in to try and do that for them. You know, that's where those experiences are really lasting for people, and, you know, how you can build that confidence and inspire people to recognize that in themselves. And again, I think that's a part of the importance of experiential training is to know that path a little bit. And, yeah.
So Peyton, I'm curious, you know, we're talking about sort of the Numinous offering and sort of what inspired you to forge this company. What are some things that, I guess you're really, really proud of, at this point in the Numinous journey? And then I'm curious, if you could give the audience a little sneak peek into where you feel like Numinous is headed.
Yeah, I think more than anything, the thing that I'm proud of is the people, that I have the chance to work with and who continue to support Numinous from, you know, being inside. It's an amazing group of people and the work that they do is incredible. I think, you know, there's a real, I think we all recognize it's going to take all of us working together to help move through, you know, the challenges that we face as a society at the moment. And, And I'm extremely proud of the team and the culture that's been created. It's extremely complex, integrating, you know, these different modalities into a framework that is accessible by, you know, we use the word accessibility a lot. And I think accessibility is to, in my experience, something that is, it's not just, is it financially accessible or is it geographically accessible? But, you know, when we think about accessibility, I think also training and the nuances of, you know, being able to meet people where they're at, depending on what's brought them there. I think there's a lot that goes into this word accessibility. But just very, very proud of the team and what we've been able to offer to people. In terms of where we're headed, it's an extremely exciting time and one that is going to definitely ask a lot of everybody. You know, MDMA, as most people are probably aware, MAPS is now completed and done the readout of their second phase 3 clinical trial that was resoundingly successful. And now it's the path to providing access to that through going through the approval with the FDA, rescheduling by the DEA. MAPS has kind of put out the expectation that should be sometime kind of mid next year. Obviously, you know, we've been a part of research with a number of different compounds that are, you know, on a path not dissimilar to MAPS as well, albeit, you know, maybe a year, a couple of years behind them. But there's a lot that's advancing really, really quickly. And so, you know, while there can be this kind of feeling of, you know, how do we grow and how do we reach as many people as possible, I think probably what's most important is we continue to ensure that the quality of care that we're able to offer to people and the quality of the training. I think, the integrity and the support that people are able to offer in this time is really important. And I think, you know, we've seen the benefits and the limitations of how quickly access opened up for ketamine assisted therapy. We've seen a lot of, you know, good practice, and we've seen, you know, a lot of probably hard learning in that space. And so I think for Numinous over the next little bit is really, you know, while we continue to look to how do we expand, I think most importantly is how do we continue to show up and support in the best way possible. And that's, you know, looking towards the future, that's the big focus.
You know, you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I feel like Numinous is a unique organization in that it's sort of a whole package approach to this, right? Our clinics that are already robust and already serving thousands of clients and patients every day. We have that research arm where we're doing clinical trials on psychedelic medicines. And we have this training arm, and each one of these things sort of informs the other. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback lately about our trainings. Not only because that, you know, we try to approach the training in the way that you described earlier, with sort of an experiential learning approach, but also because it's informed by this clinical knowledge that we have and also our experience doing psychedelic clinical trials. So yeah. I know there's a lot of great organizations out there doing clinical work, a lot of great organizations out there doing research and doing training in silos. But if I can just brag about Numinous for a bit, it's pretty cool that we have all these things melded together.
Yeah, I appreciate the sentiment and yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I think it's indicative of the space at the moment. I think collaboration is so necessary. It's a lot that, you know, we're looking at and, you know, what this sort of resurgence in psychedelics and research is centered around, and it's going to take a lot of collaboration and a lot of kind of different parts all informing the whole. So you know, just really, really grateful that we're able to do our part.
Well, and you're alluding to a lot of potential challenges here, right? So I'm curious if there's anything else you'd like to say about what you feel like the challenges are for the industry, so-called industry, as a whole, or maybe for Numinous specifically.
Yeah, I think kind of continuing on with what we talked about, it's a complex challenge. Everything from training, you know, there's so many people in need, and you know, what's kind of interesting and very different about, you know, psychedelics moving through a clinical trial approval, drug approval pathway that is very different than, you know, a normal drug that's going through that pathway is typically, you know, a drug company will do clinical trials, will prove a drug is effective, and then they'll go through the process of educating the market, you know, building awareness and all that. And that's usually like a 10-year process. Everybody knows and is talking about psychedelics. So there's already this real pull, which is, you know, on one hand, it's, I think, good, but also, you know, there's a lot of people, I'm sure, you know, both of you experience this, but the amount of people who reach out to me daily, you know, wondering when they can do MDMA therapy, when they can do psilocybin therapy, when are these things going to be available? You know, and unfortunately, it doesn't matter, you know, which indication you look at the moment, you know, the challenges continue to persist and continue to go up. And, you know, we're putting out all of this data around all of these effective, you know, clinical trials that are happening, but, you know, access in a legal and regulated way that should be able to provide, you know, insurance coverage and things like that is going to take some time. And I think that's a big challenge because, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, are feeling like they probably can't wait. And that may drive people to go out of country or to do something underground or unregulated. And there's obviously a ton of risk associated with that too. So those are some of the challenges that I see, not just for Numinous, but for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I think those challenges are challenging, right? But it's just to your point, I think it's important that as excited as we are and as impatient as we can get, that it's also important to be patient and make sure that we're doing this right.
Yep, agreed.
Well, Peyton, we're so glad you joined us on the podcast today. Like I said, it's been a long time coming. Is there any final words you have for our audience?
No, just, you know, grateful for the both of you. For the work that you do, and I feel very fortunate to be able to work alongside you both and the rest of the group at Numinous, and thanks everybody for listening. And if people are interested, obviously, in hearing more or looking to get more information on any of the things we talked about, you know, hop on our website and take a look. But very, very exciting times, and Steve, to your point, I think exciting times that emphasize the importance of doing things the right way and moving as intentionally as possible through that too.
Yeah, I appreciate your willingness to share your personal story. You know, to a lot of people, when they look at a company name, they forget there are human beings behind those companies, and it's inspiring to hear your story and as the sort of impetus for the creation of this organization. So thank you for being willing to be vulnerable there.
Thanks, Peyton. This has been great. Pleasure. And thanks for all you do. It's always great to get back to the intentions behind what we're doing and the values and really kind of share those. And I've felt that from day one since we've been working together you know, the intentions behind it from your end and the history of Numinous is something I could feel from the beginning and fully get behind. So thank you for everything you've done.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers is brought to you by Numinous, a mental wellness company committed to tackling the global mental health crisis by delivering best-in-class psychedelic-assisted therapies, contributing to the body of primary and clinical psychedelic research, and fostering healing through community connection and social responsibility. You can learn more about Numinous at numinous.com. That's N-U-M-I-N-U-S.com. If you enjoyed the show today and you want to support us, here's how you do it. Rate and review the show on platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Subscribe to the Numinous YouTube channel, like the videos, and share it. Share the show or clips of the show with someone that you think will enjoy it. Hey listeners, it's Steve Thayer here, letting you know that Numinous offers unique training opportunities for mental health practitioners to develop their skills and expertise in offering psychedelic-assisted therapy to clients. These courses are carefully crafted by Numinous professionals like myself, Reed, Joe, and others, and offer a variety of high-quality learning experiences. So if you would like to learn more about these trainings, you can find the link in the show notes below, or you can visit numinous.com/training. That's numinous.com/training. The content of this podcast does not constitute medical advice or mental health treatment. Consult with a medical or mental health professional if you believe you are in need of mental health treatment.